Ladies and gentlemen, it is what you have been waiting for. The 2024 NFL Draft is here, and we are dropping a mega episode on you this week. Get ready. Here we go.
You are now listening to the Dynasty Rewind.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rewind. I'm your host, Michael Bauer, the best in the business. Once again, back in business. Joined as always by my faithful co-host, Nate, the Professor Christian. Nate, welcome.
Thank you, Mike. I feel like I am a kid on Christmas Eve. The draft is almost here. We're about to get all of our little landing spots for our players, and I could not be more excited.
I'm excited. You know, there's been the speculation. There's been prospect fatigue. And Sunday, it is all – everything is going to be official. You know, and then Sunday, they'll probably start signing UDFAs right away.
Yep.
So we'll have that starting to get wrapped up. Probably do a UDFA episode on the Patreon. So www.patreon.com/DynastyRewind. Had a blank for a minute there. You could even do a free one-week trial too. So come in and check out our Discord for a week. But Nate, this is what we've been kind of gearing up for here all off season. The draft is here. Finally, I'm excited. Want to see what my team does. I know you want to see what the Ravens do. And I think the most important thing is it helps us figure out what we're going to do for our dynasty teams in the rookie draft. So like I mentioned before the music, we're dropping a mega episode on you. So kind of a little bit of a break from our regularly scheduled program. Also a day early. We just want this to be as relevant as long as possible for you guys. If we dropped it Wednesday, you might not listen to it right away. It gets outdated. Want everything to be as fresh as possible. And Nate, over draft weekend, guess what we're doing? Something we don't do very often. Do you want to tell the people?
Oh my gosh, Mike, we're going to New England. We're going to Connecticut. We're going to go hang out. I know. We're going to go hang out, all of us together at Sean's house. We love this. You know, every year we get together for the Fantasy Football Expo in Canton, Ohio. We also have, as of last year, started getting together for the draft because we spend so much time focusing on the draft and talking about the draft. It just makes sense that we actually get together and get to watch the draft together. And I love it. You know, last year we had it at my house, and the first night is pretty relaxing because we're not trying to live stream the first round. We're not doing a live stream till the day after. No. So we get to just enjoy the first round as friends. And it's so nice to be able to have that kind of experience together. Cause so many times we're always working together, working on things together. It's nice to just have that more casual environment, have a couple of drinks, watch the first round of the NFL draft. Like I said, Christmas time is here.
So Nate did mention that we won't be live streaming the first round, but what we will be doing is every day after the respective rounds, we will be doing a live stream probably around 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. So we'll have a live stream for you guys Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning. Sunday morning, Nate, I'm thinking, hoping it's going to be the earliest of the three because you and I got to jet back here. I got to get back to PA. You got to get back to Maryland. So thank you to Sean for opening up your home. He didn't know what an upper decker was. He will in a few days. But that being said, let's get to section one of the mega episode, and that is must draft rookies. Nate, this is essentially guys that we can't see ourselves as of right now leaving our drafts without. So let's kick it off to you. We broke it down, some guys in round one, round two, stuff like that. Nate, round one, who's your must draft player?
My must draft player in round one is Rome Odunze. He is my favorite wide receiver in this draft. I have Marvin Harrison Jr. as my wide receiver one, but Rome Odunze is my favorite player to watch. I love his ability to win all three levels of the field. You know, a lot of times I talk about the triangle with the wide receivers. I want guys that can win contested catches. I want guys that have good route running and create separation. And I want guys that create yards after the catch. He can do all three of those things, and he does it really well as well. You know, he is a pro-ready player, and you look across his stats, you know, he had some of the best contested catch numbers this past season, 75% on 28 contested catch targets. So, you know, just dominant at the catch point. He was able to create 5.6 yards per catch after the catch per reception. So he's good at creating yards after the catch. They can give him the ball on screens, things like that. And he's also a really good route runner, playing outside, creating separation when he needs to. I love Rome Odunze. I think he's a really pro-ready player. I think he's going to have a very easy transition to the NFL. And I love rookies that produce early. We all do. And I think he has some of the best chances to produce early. So Rome Odunze, I don't know where he's going to go. We're only a couple days away from finding out. I'm honestly not a huge fan of the Chicago Bears landing spot that we've seen in a lot of mock drafts, just because there's a lot of competition there. Nothing against Caleb Williams or, you know, what that offense is going to be. But, I mean, as good as Rome Odunze is, he's going to have to be dealing with target competition from Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. And, I mean, you can be a really good wide receiver. That's pretty good competition there. So whether it's the Bears, whether it's somewhere else, I'm a huge fan of Rome Odunze. I want him on as many teams as I can get. And right now, he's going at the 105 in our Dynasty Rewind ADP. Depending on, you know, who you ask, maybe it's the 106 in other leagues, maybe even the 107 if all the quarterbacks go ahead of him. If he's falling to the 106, 107, 108, I'm doing everything within my power to jump up there, grab Rome Odunze, and get out of the draft, because I think that would be a stud pick to make. You get a top guy that you can set into the top three wide receivers on your team. I think he'll produce pretty quickly. So, you know, if I need to take the 109 at a mid-second to it, say like the 205 to move up to the 105, 106 to make that Rome Odunze pick, I'm more than willing to do that. A player I would even consider trading for Rome Odunze is Michael Pittman Jr. For like the 105 or the 106 to go get Rome Odunze. I love Michael Pittman Jr., but I think Rome Odunze can be like like Michael Pittman Jr., if not better. So,
all right. I like that. And I think one thing that you said that's important, you may think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best wide receiver in the class, but Rome Odunze is your favorite. And both things can be true. You don't have to like someone just because they're the best. You can have a favorite that's not the clear-cut one at their position group. So I agree with that. Nate, my guy, really coming around on him here. That's Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. Right now, Dynasty Rewind ADP, average draft position, if you're new to playing Dynasty Fantasy Football and you don't know what ADP means, the 108. So you're getting a guy that could be a starting caliber quarterback, of course, the back half of the first round here. And I got to be honest with you, Nate, I think he has a safer floor than a guy like Jaden Daniels. I'm going to talk about Jaden Daniels later on in this episode, so I don't want to dish it all right now. But I'd rather have him. Of course, I'd still rather have Drake May, maybe Caleb Williams over him as well. Depends on how I feel during my draft. I don't have any 101s. Do you have any 101s, Nate?
I don't think so, to be honest. I have Caleb Williams in one of my C2C leagues, so I do have a share of Caleb Williams, but I don't think I have any 101s, to be honest.
Okay, I do not this year. But that being said, J.J. McCarthy, strong arm. And yeah, okay. Oh, he didn't put up a ton of yards. He wasn't asked to. He did what the coaches asked him to do. Coaches like that, by the way. Doesn't panic in the pocket. He can take a hit, but he knows how to not take hits. Leads his receivers really well. And great ball placement, too. I feel like he's going to get a good draft capital landing spot. The spot that I keep seeing that I like the most is the Minnesota Vikings. Imagine him, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, and who do they have at running back again?
Aaron Jones.
Hey, I like that. Aaron Jones. That's great. So like I said, right now, if you want to get the 108, so we're talking, you could use that, you know, tier up from a later pick in the first round, maybe throw a mid-second out there. That pick right now is valued, Nate, around James Cook, Deebo Samuel, and Kenneth Walker III too. So those are guys that if you need a quarterback, if you can move these guys for a starting level quarterback, it's a move that you can make. Nate, let's move on to the next round, round two. Who is your round two must-draft player?
All right, in round two, I want to come away with my draft with Jonathan Brooks, running back out of Texas. In our Dynasty Rewind ADP, he's going at the 202. Still, the consensus RB1 in this draft, but you're going to see a lot of drafts where Jonathan Brooks is not the running back one off the board. We're going to see where situations, you know, play out. But with Trey Benson, I think you're going to see a lot of people take Trey Benson RB1 off the board. There's going to be some Blake Corum love out there, especially if he goes to a place like the Chargers. Jalen Wright has some hype out there as well. So, you know, as much as Jonathan Brooks is kind of the consensus RB1 in this draft class, there is, not a full commitment to him being that consensus RB1 like we've seen before in some of these draft classes where there's an obvious RB1. His injury has kind of put that in doubt. And I love that because that gives us the injury discount, Mike. It's the chance for, okay, maybe right away, the drafts that you do the week after the rookie draft, people aren't going to be talking about Jonathan Brooks' injury too much. But maybe you get a little bit closer to the season, you're doing your rookie draft in July, and you're looking at your lineup at this point. And, you know, whatever that comes down to, I think that this injury discount on Jonathan Brooks, we're going to start to see it, even though he tore his ACL back in the season before the playoffs started, and he had his surgery in December done by the Dallas Cowboys staff. And he is on pace to be up and running by training camp. Yeah. He is on pace to be productive his rookie season. This is not a guy, it's not a Jameson Williams situation where we're not going to see him until week 10, week 12. We're going to see Jonathan Brooks early on in the season. We're going to see him in the preseason. And with that, I'm not worried about the injury discount. There might still be a ramp-up period for production-wise, but Jonathan Brooks, I truly believe, is the best running back in this draft class. And what we've heard from NFL media is that if he didn't tear his ACL, he would possibly be a back half of the first round kind of player. And in today's environment for running backs, that's saying something. So I think Jonathan Brooks has all the talent in the world. Breece Hall has shown us, and other running backs over the past couple years, ACL injuries do not hamper those guys as much as they have in the past. They still have to come back from them. It still sucks up a little bit, sure. But it's not what we've seen, you know, 20, 30 years ago where someone tears the ACL, they're out for a whole nother season or two, and it's a slow comeback. No, these guys are coming back quicker than ever. It's not the Achilles injury. The ACL injuries rather straightforward now, and I believe Jonathan Brooks only tore his ACL. It was not like a multi-ligament injury like we saw with J.K. Dobbins. So all of us to say, with his talent, with this injury and the timeline, that injury discount that a lot of people are baking in here, I don't think it's really going to be there. So I'm happy to pick up the value wherever I can on the board. You know, if it's in the early second, I'm happy picking him up there. I would even pick him up in the late first, depending on the landing spot. And then as far as into the second as he drops, I think it gets more and more exciting and more valuable to jump up and make that pick for him. Now, if I have to move a guy like Javonte Williams, Tyjae Spears, Ramondre Stevenson, just three other running backs that I would much rather have Jonathan Brooks straight up for than any one of those guys. So whether it's the 203, the 205, whatever you're looking at when Jonathan Brooks is on the board, maybe you're looking at a competing team, and that team would rather have Javonte Williams, rather have Ramondre Stevenson, who they know can produce year one. I would love to move one of those guys for Jonathan Brooks. I'm winning long-term. And also, I don't think I'm losing that much short-term either.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think we're all somewhat high here on Javonte. We like Tyjae Spears. We don't know what his role is going to be. And Ramondre Stevenson was disappointing last year. The New England Patriots as a whole were disappointing last year. To be fair, hopefully things look up for them. I'm an Eagles fan, so I don't really care. But that being said, I like that. I would gladly move any of these guys for Jonathan Brooks. If I'm competing now, I might have a little bit more pause to do it. But that doesn't mean that I think it's going to be a bad decision long-term. So I'm going to move back one ADP spot. I'm going to go to the 203. I also want people to keep in mind for Nate's guy, Jonathan Brooks at one point in time going as high as the 110. So good value right now. I think that's going to go throughout. And also don't league shame. Nate, I did hear you say if you're drafting closer to the start of the season, a lot of people I see on Twitter, not calling it X, they league shame leagues that draft in August. Who cares? Draft whenever you want. But don't invite me to a league where you're drafting during the draft. I like to enjoy the draft. Not to worry about selecting players. But that being said, let's move back to the 203. Florida State running back Trey Benson. He's been my guy from day one. From the second I watched the first cut of him, nothing's changing now, Nate. Vision issues, miss me with that, as you like to say. That can be coached out. He's a powerful, physical runner, strong versus stack boxes. Well above average receiver as well. It's going to keep him on the field. It's going to keep him on for three downs if they let running backs do that anymore. I like Trey Benson. I do not like the quarterback. Was it Justin Blackman?
Guys, you're dating yourself there. It's Jordan Travis.
Dating myself. Yeah, I know. You could use carbon dating for me. Jordan Travis, not a fan of him. Welcome to the UFL. Just one thing that I noticed. Actually, of all the guys from Florida State that we had to watch, he's really the only one that I could see being an impact player in the NFL. Johnny Wilson should just switch to tight end. Jaheim Bell's kind of a tweener for me. Keon Coleman has bust written all over him. And the quarterback, whose name I already forgot because he's so irrelevant, I don't think he's going to do anything either. So to me, this could be a trade back type of pick. If you're at the 110 to 112 and you want to just kind of come back into the early part of the second round, think you could do that, pick up some additional capital. If you're in the back end of the second round, this would be a great time to trade up as well. Add a late, you know, like a late second and a third from this class or next, come up and get Trey Benson. And Nate, guess what? His value right now is around Terry McLaurin, Amari Cooper, and DeAndre Swift. So we got two older wide receivers while still productive. Everybody needs a starting running back. And DeAndre Swift, some people seem to be out on him. I think he's going to have a pretty decent season in Chicago. That's what it costs to get Trey Benson. Nate, you can choose next a player from either round one or round two. Tell us who, where, and why.
I'm going with Bo Nix, who in recent weeks has actually fallen down to the consensus RB6. Michael Penix has jumped him in a lot
quarterback
of
quarterback six.
Quarterback six, not RB6. But Michael Penix Jr. has kind of passed him on the hype train here recently, it seems, on Twitter. Bo Nix right now going in Dynasty Rewind ADP at the 207. And it's going to be a question mark of draft capital for sure.
Of course.
Is Bo Nix a first-round quarterback or is he a second-round quarterback? There is a big difference between those two draft capital spots. If he's a first-rounder, there is no way I'm really letting him out of the first round in any drafts I'm doing, because I think Bo Nix's processing ability that he showed at Oregon to understand the field, understand the offense. Yes, I know he made a lot of short throws. He was not asked to push the ball down the field a ton, but his ability to process the play, make it to the next read if he needs to, and just understand how to keep the ball in the hands of the offense and not turn it over, that's something that NFL teams love to see and still be able to extend the play as well. Bo Nix has great athleticism. He's got a great arm. He's got good arm talent. He can chuck the ball down the field. Just because his A-dot was low this year does not mean he cannot throw the ball down the field. He's got an arm that is up there with the rest of this class. He's also got the ability to extend plays. He just didn't need to at Oregon. But if you go back to Auburn, he had some Heisman moments with how he extended the play and made incredible plays. Look, you have Caleb Williams kind of highlights on Bo Nix's Auburn tape. The only problem is it was littered with a whole bunch of dumb mistakes as well, the same kind of mistakes you saw Brock Purdy make when he was at Iowa State. So those things can get coached out of you, and we saw it when he went to Oregon. You know, he was in a system that was built around him more. He had some more talent around him. He was the best player on that Auburn offense when he was there, and there was not much help for him. When you see him go to a team like Oregon, his ability to lead that offense, process, he's someone that I do think at the next level can succeed. I would love to see him in a Sean Payton offense. I think he could do really, really well there. I'm hoping that the Broncos are holding their cards close to their chest. They don't have a quarterback really on their team, except for they did trade for Zach Wilson today, Mike. I'm not sure if you saw that.
I did.
That's pretty exciting. That's pretty exciting for Zach Wilson truthers out there. But I do think Bo Nix has the talent and ability to be a first-round quarterback. If he's a second-round quarterback, I am okay still here with the 207 ADP. And that's why this is a guy I don't want to leave my drafts with, because if he gets first-round draft capital, I think he's going to be of value. Because he's been talked down so much throughout the course of this pre-draft process that even if he is a first-round quarterback, he still might be the quarterback six on a lot of people's boards, especially if Michael Penix Jr. is a first-rounder. So I'm still interested in the value there. If he's a second-round quarterback, I'm still interested in the value there as well, because I think he's a better talent than that necessarily would show. And also, you know, Bob and I did a mock the mock the other day, and we used Dan Brugler from The Athletic, his most recent mock, where Bo Nix actually went in the second round and went to the Rams to be Matthew Stafford's backup and to learn under him and Sean McVay. And while that doesn't necessarily equate to year one success or maybe not even year two success,
I
think that sets up Bo Nix for a successful NFL career. And at a place like the 207, you're still getting a good value. Maybe he sits for a year or two. But you know what? Jordan Love sat for a couple of years. And if you held on to him, you're doing really well right now.
Yeah, I like that. And yes, to everyone asking, Bo Nix did play with Seth Williams at Auburn. And I did see the Zach Wilson news, me and Matt, who's training me. Shout out to you, Matt. Thank you. He listens, by the way. So thank you for listening. Thank you for training me at work, my new position. We did get a good chuckle at that. That being said, even if Michael Penix gets better draft capital than Bo Nix, if it's within reason, I'm still taking Bo Nix over Michael Penix. I'm pretty much, unless Michael Penix is the first overall pick in the NFL draft, which I doubt, I'm pretty off of him. My last guy that I want to talk about, my round one or two player, Xavier Worthy at the 110 Dynasty Rewind ADP. Speed for days, great route running. Not worried about his frame. I think he's physical enough for his frame. Look, you don't have to be super physical to win in the NFL. You know, Devonta Smith, not the most physical player, although he apparently is up to 190 pounds now. hitting the weight room, which, you know, he came into the NFL like
175, 170, yeah,
something like that. So he's been bulking up. You know, he's got his contract extension now. He's taking it seriously, which I like to see, but enough about him for right now. Physical is frame. Now, he does have some drops. The hands need to be taken care of. These are all things that could be worked out at the next level. Coaches love guys like this that can go out, that can put that, you know, that can absolutely turn a defensive back around. I think he's going to get good draft capital. Like you said, the 110, mm-hmm. you can move on from players like George Pickens, who, Nate, I think you've been moving off of pretty much all offseason. Yeah. Bryce Young or Jaden Reed. If you don't believe in Jaden Reed, a lot of people think that the Packers have kind of a convoluted you know, wide receiver room. I'm still a Jaden Reed believer. You know, I'd have a hard time moving him. That depends on where Xavier Worthy goes.
Yeah.
But he could also be a tier down for you. If you're at the 106, 107, you don't like what's there for whatever reason, you could do that, gain additional picks. Can you move from the 112 to the 110 with just a third? You think? Do you need a little bit more? I mean, it's two spots back into the first round.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if it's like the 301, 302, maybe you can make that move. If the person at the 110 is like, hey, there's three players I want, just give me something and I'll pick up whoever's left. But you might need like a late second, but I don't think too much more than that.
Yeah. So those are some guys you can move. Nate, let's move on to the next section, section two. This is rookies that we want to avoid. And what we're going to do instead of drafting them, maybe it's go after somebody that's already in the NFL or somebody we want to draft instead. Okay. We're also going to say why we're drafting them. Nate, also mad at you for filling this out before me because you stole my guy.
I know.
But I've been hating on him enough. It is your turn. Who are you avoiding and why?
Yeah, you were just talking about avoiding him, and I'm on the same page here, Mike. I'm avoiding Michael Penix Jr. And look, I loved watching Michael Penix in college, the way that that Washington offense came together. It was really exciting and loved watching them throughout the season. Them getting to the national championship was a lot of fun. But as far as translating to the next level, I'm not a big believer in Michael Penix Jr. And for a couple different reasons. Number one, he's an older prospect, but hey, you can say that also about Bo Nix, who I am a fan of. But what comes with that age, unfortunately for Michael Penix, that doesn't come with Bo Nix, is the extensive injury history. You know, he had multiple knee injuries while he was in Indiana before he transferred over to Washington. He has had a pretty clean bill of health since then, but the knee injuries, he had a shoulder injury as well. And that stuff does get to you, especially the knee stuff. You know, he's not a very mobile quarterback. You know, when he first came into college, Indiana, Mike, you probably remember the Indiana Penn State game pretty well, where he ran for the pylon at the last minute.
That wasn't a touchdown. Move on, Nate.
Wasn't a touchdown, I don't think, but it was. Sure was scored as one.
I didn't think it was, but it did get scored as such. But yes, I do remember.
But he was a bit more mobile back then. He's not quite as much now. And, you know, that's not something I want to see about my new franchise quarterback before he even graduates college. He's less mobile than he started out in college. Like, that doesn't seem like it's setting me up for a ton of success at the next level. Also, another thing with Michael Penix Jr. is he honestly was not that accurate. He's a good quarterback, and he's certainly a great college quarterback. But to get to the next level and succeed at the NFL is very difficult. I mean, with Zach Wilson getting traded today, looking at that draft class, only Trevor Lawrence is still with his team and getting paid and about to get paid. The rest of that entire draft class has been traded to different teams at this point or released. So it's hard to make it at the NFL level. And Michael Penix Jr., you look at a lot of different sources who scout quarterbacks, chart quarterback throws, you look at PFF, and Michael Penix Jr., he's not that accurate, especially across the middle of the field. You know, he made good use of three NFL wide receivers in Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, and Jalen Polk. And those guys also won a lot of contested catches, which Michael Penix Jr. put his guys in those positions quite often. So, you know, I don't think he's quite the package that some people have made him out to just because he was a good quarterback in college. Just because you're a great college quarterback does not mean you're going to be a great NFL quarterback. That transition is difficult. I think we can even say some similar things, maybe, Mike, about your next talking point here. But before we move on to there, some players that you could maybe sell the pick that Michael Penix Jr. is going for right now in DR ADP is the 112. At the end of the first, if I need a quarterback and I'm looking at Michael Penix Jr., I would possibly be looking at Bo Nix if he got first-round draft capital, maybe moving back to draft Bo Nix if he got second-round draft capital. But if I need a quarterback, can I go after Bryce Young? Can I go after Kirk Cousins? Can I go after Baker Mayfield? Maybe even Baker Mayfield plus for the 112. I would rather invest into those guys than invest into Michael Penix Jr. I know that those guys can succeed at the NFL level. I still believe that Bryce Young can. We haven't seen it yet, but I do believe that the Carolina Panthers are investing into that offense and setting him up for success. So I'm willing to go with those guys before I am Michael Penix Jr. at this point.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And of course, the lack of mobility concerns me as well. You don't want somebody to regress in that area, especially when that's when they were recruited as a mobile quarterback. But let's talk about another mobile quarterback, guy who I think could potentially have just bust written all over him. It's LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. Right now, his Dynasty Rewind ADP is the 106. I mean, look, I don't think he possesses elite arm talent. There's a lot of passes that left a lot to be desired, especially on his deep throws. 5 years in college, he had one that was a really good year. He won the Heisman. And don't come at me with the, but he won the Heisman. Troy Smith won the Heisman. He played wide receiver for the Ravens. Keep that in mind, or whatever they did with Troy Smith down there. I don't even remember. Do you remember what they did with him?
Irrelevant.
Yeah, he played wide receiver. And then the rest of his, you know, I mean, they were average seasons or slightly above average, really. I mean, even his first year at LSU, 2,913 yards, 17 touchdowns, three interceptions. That's kind of just a slightly above average season for, you know, a guy playing at LSU. Really, it's just, I've talked about it ad nauseum at this point. I'm concerned about the way he runs. I don't think he protects himself from contact very well. He has a very slender frame. All of these quarterbacks in this class should sit, him especially. Michael Penix Jr., even more especially so. So right now, I would trade back for J.J. McCarthy. You know, I've talked about him going at the 108. Or Brock Bowers is a spot behind Jaden Daniels. You could even just draft Brock Bowers at the 106. Correct that ADP. What's going up with the Dynasty Run Crew? That's why we need you in there to draft with us every night to make sure that this gets fixed. Also, can I use the 106 to maybe and add something to go after a Jared Goff or Justin Herbert, guys that are already playing, guys that are established in this league? Can I do that? Because I think I would rather do that right now than draft Jaden Daniels, to be honest with you. Go after Trevor Lawrence. People are down on Trevor Lawrence for whatever reason right now. I don't understand why. He should get a lifetime pass because Urban Meyer was his head coach his first year in the NFL.
Yeah, that's tough stuff.
It is. All right, let's move on to our next section here. Nate, these are sleepers and stashes. Admittedly, this is probably one of my favorite aspects about doing scouting and all this stuff. I love guys that, you know, you could throw in your taxi squad. Maybe they turn into something. Maybe they don't. Sometimes these guys turn into nothing more than me and Nate talking off air going, hey, remember DeMonte Coxie. Remember Tamarian Terry.
The aforementioned Seth Williams.
I got to throw Seth Williams in there. So we're talking about guys in rounds 3, 4, and 5 that we're not talking about as much, maybe here, maybe out there as much. So we want to get into it. Nate, we're going to kick it off with you. Give me a round 3 player.
Yeah, one of my favorite players right now in round 3 is Jalin Polk, one of the wide receivers from that Washington Huskies team. I'm currently going at DR ADP of the 305. And what I like about Polk, and actually something similar I like about Roma Dunze, is Polk is a very solidified all-around wide receiver. He seems very pro-ready to me. He is very physical at the catch point. He is very established in his technique, in both his route running and, you know, at the catch point. And we see that with a 5.3% drop rate throughout his career, a career contested catch rate of 51%. He's averaged over 2 yards per route run the last 3 seasons at Washington. He plays 60% of his snaps outside, 40% of his snaps inside. So he has positional versatility and a 4.5 240-yard dash and a 38-inch vertical show the athleticism as well. He really checks all the boxes at the wide receiver position for me. I've talked about, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily elite at anything. And that's probably why a lot of people haven't gravitated towards him as being a top wide receiver in this class. But if I was an NFL team looking at these wide receivers and moving past the first five or six and trying to find someone I know that I could plug into my offense, I wouldn't look much farther down the list because I would see Jalen Polk. And I think he's another one of these wide receivers that is just so pro ready and ready to set into an offense. And if you put him in a spot where he can be that X outside wide receiver for an offense, then I think he's going to have production that's going to match it. For me, you know, looking at his fantasy projection, I don't necessarily think he's going to be a top 24 wide receiver. There's a lot of competition right now to be a top 24 wide receiver. There's a lot of really good young wide receivers in the NFL. But Jalen Polk, I think he's got a really good floor because of his ability to do everything well and the fact that he does look already so pro ready. So with that, I think he could definitely grow into the wide receiver two for a team. And with that, could be a wide receiver 30 to 40, you know, kind of like a wide receiver three, high-end wide receiver four, which you're probably not too excited about the wide receiver 40 right now, but there's actually a lot of good wide receivers who find themselves in that range because the wide receiver position right now is so congested. So Jalen Polk, if he became, you know, a mid-30 wide receiver, he would be a really good flex play for you, someone that you'd be really excited to draft in the third round, be filling out your wide receiver core. And I think he's going to be a guy that you can rely on. So Jalen Polk, one of my safer picks in the third round, and that's one of the reasons I like him so much.
I like this. And I'm actually surprised the guy that you pick and the guy that I picked, I think their ADP should be flipped. I like both of these guys.
Yeah.
I actually like your guy a little bit more, but I've been on Javon Baker pretty much this whole offseason, going at the 303. So two spots ahead of where, I don't know if it's Jalen or Jalen. Sorry. I don't know what it is. And yes, to the comment, if you can't say a player's name, you shouldn't be talking about these players. I'm old and from Pennsylvania. I can barely speak. Okay. Happy I get through a podcast without as many mistakes as I have. So UCF wide receiver Javon Baker. See, all right, can't even say Baker. Haven't been to talk about Baker Mayfield. His routes are good. They're not perfect. I'm not saying that they are, but this is why he's going in the third round. He's going to make a good wide receiver three on a team. I think he has low-end wide receiver two upside, given a good landing spot, given ample opportunity. He's strong after the catch, fairly physical. There were times out there where I saw him, and I understand he was playing at UCF, okay? So just throw that out the window. Let's not forget, he also played in the SEC before he transferred down to UCF so he can get an opportunity. When he get an opportunity at Alabama, look, people transferred from Ohio State where they couldn't get an opportunity to play at Alabama. Just going off what I see. There were times watching him line up against defensive backs where he made it look so absolutely effortless and easy. I loved what I was seeing from him. Great breakaway speed as well. This is a guy who I think starts his career as a wide receiver three. Wide receiver three in the NFL, wide receiver four-ish in fantasy. He's going to give you some weeks with flex play, flex upside. I think there's a chance that in a few years he could solidify being a wide receiver two on a team. Now, I think, honestly, Javon Baker, if he goes to a bad team, would probably be a good thing where there's not a ton of wide receiver competition too. He can kind of get in early. So, you know, normally like to see guys go to good teams, but this is a case where Javon Baker going to a bad team might be a good thing. Nate, let's move on. Round four, we have talked about him. It's been on the Patreon. Who you got?
Yeah, another one of my favorite wide receiver sleepers is Malik Washington out of Virginia. Transferred them from Northwestern and immediately made a huge impact. In his first year at Virginia, had 111 receptions for 1,384 yards and 9 touchdowns. This is at 5'8", 195 pounds, so he's a little short, but he is stocky. He had 3 drops this season on 138 targets, Mike, so he is sure-handed. He's able to handle volume. He plays out of the slot mostly. And with that, he's able to create yards after the catch, 6.4 yards after the catch per reception. And also, despite that small frame, is very, very physical. That shows in his yards after the catch ability. Also shows in the fact that he had a 64.7% contested catch rate on 17 targets this year. So even if he's not, you know, that big, he's still so physical at the catch point. He still has, you know, as some people would say, he has that dog in him where he's got that physicality and that extra motivation to come down with those 50-50 balls, despite not being, you know, the betting favorite probably in most of those situations. So Malik Washington, you know, I think he right now is kind of like a late day two wide receiver, maybe early day three, just because he's probably limited to the slot at the next level. And a lot of times those slot wide receivers do get devalued a little bit compared to just other wide receivers you can play outside. So Malik, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I thought you were done. I'm sorry. Continue. I'll chime in when you're done.
You're good. So Malik Washington is someone that I'm a really big fan of. And right now with ADP of 405, it's basically like a free pick in the fourth round. And I think Malik Washington is another one of the safest players in his round, just like how I felt about Jalen Polk. You know, Malik Washington, I feel so good about the fact that he's going to be sticking around for a while. He's not just, you know, a player that's could be out of the league like in a year. I think Malik Washington is going to have a role in offense, even if he doesn't develop into a fantasy relevant player on a week to week basis. I think we're going to be hearing about Malik Washington for a couple years to come on rosters and being a member of, you know, some pretty exciting offenses. So what I do think he can do, I do think he could actually grow into the wide receiver two for a team out of the slot. And like Jalen Polk, I think he could develop into kind of that, you know, consistent wide receiver 30 to wide receiver 40. I think, you know, if you're picking up a guy in the later rounds who can give you that kind of production, I think you're really lucky to be, in fact, because, you know, like I said, maybe wide receiver 30 to 40 doesn't sound very exciting for you. But Mike, what about your, not your king, but our YouTube comments king, Drake London, who was wide receiver 42 last year in points per game, and the year before that, wide receiver 43 in points per game. So, I mean, if Malik Washington and Jalen Polk can at least be Drake London, I think you'd be happy. So I think these guys have that kind of upside. I think that they're great picks in the later rounds. And I think, you know, while there's a lot of running back talent that I'm interested in the second round, I think we get to the third and fourth, and there's some wide receivers I really like.
It's a very Dynasty Rewind episode, talking Yak Rec, taking shots at Drake London, and talking about Seth Williams. I love it. my fourth round player.
401k?
Yes. 401k. Soon I'll be eligible in January. That's Kentucky running back Ray Davis. He's going at the 408. He's a physical runner with a low compact running style, and he is a well above average wide receiver. Now, check this. His ADOT, average depth of target, for those of you who are new, is 0.4, which is not good. He's getting thrown close to the line of scrimmage. However, his Yak Rec, yards after catch per reception, is 10.8. So not only is he an above average and underappreciated wide receiver, when he gets the ball in his hands, he's doing something with it. He doesn't just catch the ball and fall down or get tackled right away like some running backs do that we've seen throughout the years. I wouldn't want to tackle this guy. He has no neck to speak of. He looks like a giant thumb with a Kentucky helmet out there. Just low center gravity, well balanced. He pushes through contact really well. I think he is a really good complementary running back in the NFL. You get a guy like this, if he's a team's running back too, he's going to get enough work on a weekly basis. Not in his rookie season, I don't think, but I think overall he gets enough work to be a guy where it's like, oh man, ETN's out, right? I don't have Tank Bigsby. I can't trade for him. I got Ray Davis. I'm gonna fire him up. Let's go. Let's get it. So he's a guy you could pluck off your bench, start in there a little bit, kind of like how Brian Robinson was his first year when Antonio Gibson was supposed to be the guy.
Yeah.
You know, but there's that possibility too. These guys get drafted late. Is he the next Kyren Williams? Does he kind of come out of nowhere a year or two down the road? But most likely a running back two on an NFL team, running back three or four.
You know, I'm a huge fan of Ray Davis, so I'm all about this. I think he's a very underrated receiver because of how he looks. You look at him and you're like, all right, that's a physical running back, so he probably can't catch. But no, Ray Davis can not only just catch the ball pretty well, but he can actually run routes pretty well and get down the field. So I'm a big fan of Ray Davis. I know one of the biggest issues with him is his age. He will be turning 25 by the end of the season. At this point, I think running backs are looked at as a one contract player. So, especially probably day three draft capital. I don't think they're too worried about that.
Yeah, to me, running back age doesn't matter as much because once they're on their second contract, I'm not super interested anyway. Unless they come into the NFL really early, and they still have some tread left on their tires when they get that second contract, then it's a different. And of course, you know, every player you evaluate differently. You know, what have they done? What do you think they could be? Where are they? Of course, everything's different. So, Nate, let's go into our next player, round five. But that ADP looks a little odd.
I cheated here. Talking about physical running backs, another physical running back, and one of my favorite, who I do think you can get in round five right now. But, Mike, we have smart people in the Dynasty Rewind Patreon, and it's affecting my ability to select players, so I just had to go with it anyway. Kimani Vidal out of Troy. Actually, I think his name is Kimani Vidal. I don't know. I call him Kimani Vidal, but I think I heard it different when I was watching his film.
Kimani Vidal, welcome to America. We're going to butcher your name.
That's how they say Vidal over in Spain, where I've watched soccer before, so I just kind of assumed that was how they say it here, but maybe not. Anyway, yes. Kimani here is DR ADP of the 409. Our people know, hey, we got to take this guy in the fourth round. He's a great late deep sleeper. But most places, you're probably going to be able to pick him up in the fifth round because he's coming from a small school like Troy. But, Mike, this guy was a small school big player of the week for you. And there's good reason, too, because despite an offensive line that struggled this year compared to last year, they were 10 points lower in their PFF run blocking grade than they were last year. He had a career year, 1,661 yards for Kimani, which was second in the NCAA on 5.6 yards per carry, had 14 touchdowns and only two fumbles. On top of that, 94 missed tackles forced, which was second in the nation. Also, beautiful. 47 runs of 10 yards or more, which was first in the nation. Also had 3.58 yards after contact per attempt, which is a really good number as well. So you look at this guy, and he dominated on the ground. Now, he was playing for Troy. He was playing in a group of five conference. But when we see those guys and they dominate, that is what we want to pay attention to. Vidal was out there, and he was dominating. Also, he was used in pass blocking as well, 121 pass blocking snaps this year, Mike. So he has the experience. I wouldn't say he's an A-plus pass blocker, but a lot of these guys coming out of college don't even usually have the experience, and he does. And he's actually a pretty decent receiver as well. He's handled a ton of volume over his college career. Over the 4 years at Troy, he has been their starting running back for the majority of that. 780 carries, 91 catches. So, you know, over 850 touches for this guy over the last 4 years. He can be a workhorse running back. He's not going to probably need to be that at the next level. But I think Kimani here, he goes somewhere, probably ends up being the RB3. And there's a couple events that happen. And all of a sudden, Kimani is on the NFL field. And he might not be given back that RB2 spot. I think he's that good of a player where if he gets on the field, I mean, he knows how to play football really well. He's physical. He's hard to bring down. He's a shorter frame, and he uses that to his advantage. He's a very physical runner. So, you know, this is a guy I definitely like. Maybe some Zach Moss backup vibes out of him where, you know, you could like have that. Some really good spot starts out of Kimani. So I like him. I think he's a great pick at the end of the fourth round into the fifth round. You throw him in your taxi squad, see what happens. One of my favorite deep sleepers in this draft class.
Three games last year, over 200 yards rushing.
I like that.
257, 242, and 233. One of those was against Appalachian State. It's a good program. You know, the other two, I get it, because we're going to hear you in the comments, Arkansas State and STF Austin.
Well, right. Arkansas State's not a bad program. I don't know how much I know about Austin over there, but.
Well, here, 114 yards against Army, and all they do is run the ball. So that means that they practice against it defensively all week. So yeah, and hey, when I you hear people say, oh, he's only 5'8", he's also 218 pounds. Yeah, so
he's thick.
I like Kimani Vidal. I actually think he was a two-time small school big player of the week, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and verify. That being said, it's round five. It is not consensual. Dylan Johnson at the 501. Exodus wrote an album titled Another Lesson in Violence. That is Dylan Johnson's running style. Just absolute pure ferocity. I love it. And he played at Mississippi State, which means he's also an above average receiving back as well. He might be everything I wanted Kylan Hill to be. Why do I keep doing this to myself? He's another guy that just plays through anything that will not put him in the hospital. You know, mild nagging, whatever. unless he's getting drug off the field, he's going to play. You saw it in the national championship game. I believe I saw a close-up where his like whole ankle and kind of leg was taped up a little bit.
Yeah,
he was in pain. He was still out there. This is a guy who, like Kamani Vidal, could definitely come in, be a backup, be even on a practice squad. But given an opportunity, he's a guy that NFL coaches are going to like. I think he could be this year's Brian Johnson. I said it. You ready to move on, Nate?
I'm ready to move on. I think I don't know about Brian Robinson. I think he said Brian Johnson. But
Brian Robinson, yes. Brian Johnson is now an offensive analyst for the Washington Commanders.
We got there.
I almost said Washington Redskins too, showing my age. all right, let's talk our last section to close it out. Some superlatives, you know, we got some different categories here. We'll go through them one by one. Let's go to the first one. Nate, who's your guy?
My guy is Ladd McConkey. And, you know, it's kind of poetic. When we broke, 10,000 subscribers earlier this year, we were actually talking about Ladd McConkey on the live stream. And at that point, I hadn't got to watch any Ladd McConkey at that point. I was like, yeah, he is a fun guy. You know, Georgia liked him a lot, but he wasn't on the field. I then got to get into Ladd McConkey, and I've just been a huge fan ever since. The way that he runs his routes, the way he creates separation, and then also has the yak ability on top of it. You know, I've kind of comped him to some Deontay Johnson with his ability to run routes, play outside. He's a flanker. He's not a slot guy. And then create yards after the catch as well. He's fast. He does a lot. He did have some issues getting on the field at Georgia, but not because of his talent, because of medicals. And I think if we see him drafted where we're expecting him to be drafted at this point, either, you know, possibly the late first, but more likely the early second, I think that kind of takes away any medical issues that we're going to worry about. I haven't really heard them pop up at all ever since the beginning of the pre-draft process, when that was just a question. Has not popped up anymore, so I think that's all behind him. So Ladd McConkey, one of my favorite wide receivers in this draft, especially because you probably can pick him up in the second round, and I think he's got top 24 wide receiver upside in fantasy.
All right, beautiful. So my guy, we've talked about him before, Troy Franklin.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big Troy Franklin guy. Sorry, I was scrolling down on the show sheet a little bit. I lost my spot. Forgive me. Good long speed. Nate, I know you were concerned about him being kind of pegged into the one-trick pony type role. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope teams can see that he could do so much more than that. Solid hands. He's got a little bit of a slender frame on him, but I'm really not overly concerned there. The NFL seems to be embracing these guys that could do everything, even though they're a little bit smaller. So I don't see that as being a problem. Right now, he's at the 201 Dynasty Rewind ADP, the best ADP on the planet. I just want to throw that out there. But I would draft him as early as the 109, honestly, depending on his landing spot. That's right now, before he has a spot. I'm hearing a lot of Buffalo Bills talk, which I think would be a really good spot.
Gabe Davis replacement, I guess.
I think he could be better than Gabe Davis. He could be what we wanted Gabe Davis to be.
Well, speaking of draft slots, I missed DR ADP for Ladd McConkey right now is the 204. Yeah. I would draft him as of the 112.
Okay. All right. Yes, you're the guy pushing up Ladd's ADP.
That's me.
All right. Well, Nate, let's move on then. And let's talk about who your bust is.
Yeah. Whose ADP I'm pushing down? Keon Coleman. I've been talking about him for the majority of the offseason as someone I'm wary on. And this is coming from someone who last offseason, I invested a lot into Keon Coleman in my Devy leagues, in my C2C leagues, making that transition to Florida State, what he did at Michigan State while Jaden Reed was there, a lot of potential. I still think there's a lot of potential there with Keon Coleman, but I don't think that Florida State necessarily developed him any more than he was when he was at Michigan State. He's still raw. He's still a very unrefined route runner. And with that comes the lack of ability to play outside of the NFL level. If, you know, he's tall, but he's not super strong or very, you know, physical that you would necessarily expect a lot of X receivers to be. So if you're looking at Keon Coleman and looking at his frame and his size, and you're thinking that he can step in as your new outside wide receiver for your team, I would be very worried about that. In some of the same ways I was worried about that with Quentin Johnston last year. I think Keon Coleman would be much better as a big slot. You let him work with some buffer at the line of scrimmage, some cushion there. And with that, you can have him run into space. He can win those contested catches across the middle. that would be a better place for him than I think being put outside and growing as the X wide receiver. Another player, Treylon Burks, was not able to make that transition to the NFL to be that X receiver, despite being a bigger guy than Keon Coleman, definitely thicker. I had probably 20 pounds on Keon Coleman. So it's not the easiest transition for some of these guys that have won on just size in the NCAA to make that transition to the NFL, especially when they're unrefined route runners. So one question for me is, wherever Keon Coleman goes, are they going to try to stick him outside and just see what happens? Or are they going to let him start out as a big slot, develop his route running, and then maybe he pushes himself outside once he's got that ability? I just have a lot of question marks about Keon. I do think there's a lot of talent there, a lot of upside, but in a lot of places where I've seen him go, now his ADP has dropped for us. It's the 210 in Dynasty Rewind ADP. I've seen him, as a top six receiver in some people's rankings. I've seen him going in the early second, mid second. I'm not touching him to the late second. I think the 210 is a pretty decent spot where I'm willing to gamble on his production profile. Where he's got that size, that speed, maybe not in the 40-yard dash, but I do think he's still a rather athletic player. So Keon Coleman, a lot of question marks. I'm comfortable taking him at the late second into the early third, but not much earlier than that because just too many question marks, too boom or bust for me.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. I agree. Should have went back another year to play Florida State with DJU, I think. But here we are. My bust, the LSU quarterback, Jaden Daniels. I've talked about it before. I'm not sure if he's a guy that should be leading the franchise right from the get-go. He should be sitting for a year, maybe even two. I've advocated my concerns about his lack of ability to protect himself. I do not think he has elite arm strength or arm talent. I don't think he necessarily leads receivers all that well, very finicky in the pocket. And yes, he won the Heisman. Again, I'm aware of that. But is that a product of him being that good? Is it the system he was put in? Or was it the fact that he had Malik Nabers to throw to and Brian Thomas Jr. to throw to and Noah Cain to check down to? So I had to throw that in there too. I will say this. One thing, he didn't throw a ton of interceptions, 20 in five seasons. It's 4 a year. For all you math nerds out there. But he's good at the 106 right now, which I'd rather just take Brock Bowers at the 106, get a generational talent at the tight end position. And where I'd likely draft him, I probably won't, to be honest with you. I don't think I'll have any Jaden Daniels shares. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm okay with it. But I would be more comfortable. The 108, 110 in that area is where I'd be more comfortable drafting him. Nate, let's talk about who you think has the best hands in the class.
This is a hard one because we got a lot of good wide receivers in this draft class. But somebody I did want to mention as having some of the best hands in this class, Ricky Pearsall. His ability to catch the ball through contact has been so impressive. You go back to the catch he had against Charlotte where he was across the middle, caught it with one hand, took the hit from the linebacker or the safety across the middle of the field, held on to it. I have no idea how. A couple other plays that are littered throughout his film where he's taking the ball across the middle of the field in those not just contested catches, but those catch in traffic moments where he is able to secure the ball and he's not just going to be limited to the slot the next level. So that mid field ability to win the ball and keep the ball is really impressive, but he's also able to track the ball really well down the field, get his hands on the ball there, win down the field. So his ability to catch the ball and secure it at all levels of the field really impressed me. And I really want to make sure that, we take a good look at him as having some of the best hands in this class because it's hard enough to get your hand on the ball and catch it, but to catch it through contact when someone's out there trying to knock your head off, that's a lot harder. And Ricky Pearsall did it in and out.
Man, I know you are a Ricky Pearsall fan, but we're talking best hands in the class. I'm going with Jalen Polk from Washington. Hands like Stick'em. Just I'm putting the film on. He's got those big old mitts. Just bringing everything in. He's good in traffic as well. Look, Nate, he's got a career contested catch percentage of 51, which for a guy who isn't really the biggest wide receiver, is better than what I expected it to be. Expected it to be much worse. He's a career catch percentage of 64.7. Not bad when it's coming from a quarterback that's not extremely accurate like Michael Penix Jr. So Ricky Pearsall, good in traffic. I just think Jalen Polk has the best hands in the class. Love what I see out of him.
It's good hands there.
It does. Nate, who is the best route runner in the class?
Oh, man, you already know this answer. Ladd McConkey. That's why he's my guy.
I
do,
because I can see the show sheet, but the people can't.
Ladd McConkey, I think he is the best route runner in the class. I think he's the most refined. I think he has the most technique of anybody. You know, his feet are so good. Being able to be on his toes, make sudden changes without losing momentum. He's just obviously such a well-practiced route runner. You know, that's one thing you notice as soon as you turn on the film with him, is that you can tell that he has put thousands of hours into learning how to run routes and learning how to create separation. Because there's one thing, you can learn how to run routes, but just because you know how to run routes doesn't mean you necessarily know how to create separation either. You know, being able to run routes and then also implement those little head fakes, being able to sell your movement to a defender. He's able to do all those things, create separation, get open, and be a quarterback's best friend. And therefore, I think that Ladd McConkey is the best route runner in this draft class.
All right, perfect. I'm going with LSU wide receiver Malik Nabers. I think this is a player right here. Just looking at him, I love what he brings. Slippery after the catch, too. Just the guy who's hard to bring down. I know that's not what we're talking about. But he can run any route, anywhere. Routes are crisp. I saw a couple rounded ones here and there, but not everything's going to be perfect. I just love Malik Nabers, man. And there's another guy who, you know, like Ladd McConkey, I think just wants to get better all the time. Makes me wish Marvin Harrison Jr. wasn't in this class so he could be the wide receiver one. But, hey, that's just what it is. That's how it goes. But Malik Nabers, love what he brings to the table as far as route running goes. Nate, you've touched on it before, but you could touch on it again. Who's the best in contested catch situations?
It's Rome Odunze. It's Rome Odunze with the 75% catch rate this year, the 52.7% catch rate, contested catch rate throughout his career. You know, he stepped it up this year, and I've heard, you know, NFL scouts talk about his ability at the catch point is so impressive because it's not something that he relies on. We've seen other wide receivers where if they can't win the contested catch, they don't produce that game. You know, if you can shut down one of those guys in the contested catch situation, they can't do it. He does not rely on that. He uses it when he needs to. He breaks it out when he needs to, and he wins at such a high rate that it's just so impressive. I haven't seen, you know, a guy that is so consistently winning those 50-50 balls. You know, a lot of times we say, oh, this guy makes a 50-50 ball seem like a 70-30 ball. Well, in reality, if he's making a 50-50 ball, actually a 50-50 ball, that's pretty impressive. Winning 50% of your contested catch rate, contested catches is very, very impressive. And he did it three quarters of the time this past year with Washington. And it was just so impressive. I don't think it's going to have any issue translating to the next level either. He's got a good frame on him at 6'3", 215 pounds. And, you know, Rome Odunze, like I've continued to say, such a pro-ready player, so nuanced, not just with his routes, but also at the catch point, winning these contested catches with his late hands. He, you know, baits the defender to give him the best chance in those contested catch situations. He knows how to win those contested catches. He doesn't just outplay the other player. He outsmarts the other player in those positions as well. So Rome Odunze, my favorite here.
Nate, what about if I told you that we had a guy who's 5'10", 175 pounds, and has a 66.7% contested catch percentage?
That's pretty impressive. Who is it?
That would be USC wide receiver Taj Washington. I like Taj Washington. He played at the East-West Shrine Bowl, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yes. He should have been at the Senior Bowl. I like Taj Washington a lot. I feel like people aren't talking about him. They should be. He was an outside wide receiver when he came into college. USC kind of put him in the slot, but I think he has the versatility that he could play anywhere. I wouldn't want him exclusively as an outside wide receiver. I would like him moved around a little bit, obviously depending on the situation that he's in. But still, 66.7% for his career. I'm sorry, that was actually in 2023. Forgive me, I was looking at last year. Still doing it last year. Fantastic. I love Taj Washington. You're going to be talking about him a little bit because, Nate, who's the best after the catch?
Well, Mike, I knew who you were going to pick for this, so I had to pick somebody different. And it was actually quite easy because we all know about the Yak King around here, Malachi Corley. Mm. But the guy you were just talking about, Taj Washington, had the same amount of Yak wreck as Malachi Corley this past year.
Well, well, well.
And you know what? I like Taj Washington as a wide receiver. I like him a bit more all around as a wide receiver with his ability to run routes and, you know, not just win on screens. But to show off 8.6 yak rec was very, very impressive. And he's someone who's very physical after the catch. I think, you know, while Malachi Corley probably has that locked in as the best yak guy, I think there is definitely an argument for Taj Washington in what he did at USC, not just on screens, but throughout, you know, his entire repertoire of routes that he was running inside and out, you know, to put up these kind of numbers and be that good after the catch. Taj Washington definitely deserves some recognition for being one of the best in this class at yards after the catch.
One thing I will say, I do feel like Malachi Corley, who is my player, by the way, is a little bit more physical after the catch.
Would you? I think he's a bit thicker.
Yeah, he is. He's 200, and I'm looking up right here. He's 210, 5'11", 210, and 5'10", 175 is Taj Washington. Yeah. I just want to bring something up here. My computer is not cooperating with me. I know you find that hard to believe, everybody. let's talk about yak rec. So these guys are still close. We're talking 8.6. That's last year. Malachi Corley's career yak rec, this is in four seasons, is 8.2. And Taj Washington, not super far off for his career in five seasons. We got 7.3. So both numbers still fantastic. Impressive. It looks like Taj had a bit of a clunker yak rec year when his first year in USC was only 4.9. Mm-hmm. That was probably them trying to figure out exactly how they wanted to use him out there. So, but that's what we got going on. Malachi Corley is my guy. Nate alluded to it. He was right. All right. That was over an hour. That was our mega episode. Not doing that again, everybody. Just kidding. Hey, if you liked it and you want to see more like this, just let us know. Drop some comments down below. Happy draft, everybody. We will be back with some live streaming. So if you have not yet, subbed to our YouTube channel, go do it now. Just go on YouTube, type in Dynasty Rewind. Boom, there we're going to be. And you know what? Treat yourself. Head down to the link below of this pod or of this video. Get a shirt, get a hat, celebrate the draft in style. It may not be there in time, but you could do it for your rookie draft. Nate's wearing one right now. He looks fantastic. I just threw on a hoodie because it's kind of chilly up here. So until next time, everybody, for Nate, I'm Mike. Thanks for listening. We'll see you after the draft.